The Africa Law Tech podcast explores the latest in law technology and entrepreneurship in the African continent. This weekly podcast is brought to you by the Lawyers Hub, a law tech organization working on digital policy and justice innovation in Africa. To find out more, visit lawyershub.org or email us on info@lawyershub.ke.
Thank you so much for joining us. Please feel free to ping your friends or your colleagues who you feel that this conversation would be of interest to them. Today, we'll be looking at the Kenya Film Classification Board's proposed co-regulation framework for broadcast and video on demand platforms. It's quite a mouthful. So we'll be breaking down the policy. We also have the opportunity to speak to some of the brains behind it. They'll give us a bit of background as to why this policy and probably the challenges that they envision in the implementation process. My name is Selina Onyando. I am part of the team here at the Lawyers Hub. I will be your moderator for the evening. We'll also allow our speakers to introduce themselves as we proceed. Today's session is on the proposed co-regulation framework for broadcast and video on demand platforms by the Kenya Film Classification Board. Just to kick it off, I'll give a quick summary of what the policy looks like and probably why it's relevant. So the scope of this framework, it applies specifically to entities operating with a physical presence in Kenya. I think that's very important. And it includes broadcasters, video on demand platforms, over-the-top services, and digital content creators, distributors, exhibitors, and aggregators with a significant number of followers or subscribership or viewership in the Kenyan context. So there's, of course, the element of what exactly is a video on demand platform. So according to the framework, a video on demand platform is any video service that offers VTV or movies available at a viewer's convenience. A popular example would be Royal Media Services, ViewSasa. And then we also have the additional element of the over-the-top service. So the over-the-top service is a streaming service that delivers film or TV content over the internet. So there's a really thin line in terms of the distinction between the two. But per my understanding, the video on demand platform, basically it allows you to view videos after probably they had been broadcasted. For example, if there's a show that you watch that airs every Sunday, and for some particular reason you missed it on Sunday, then the platform will allow you to access it on Monday or any other day when you would want to access it. Now, the over-the-top service is a live streaming service. So a good example would be ESPN Africa, that is formerly Quest TV, that allows you to watch sports live, or platforms such as Twitch. I don't know if anyone in the room is familiar with Twitch, that allows you to watch live streams. Of course, we have the team from KFCB here, so in case that the distinction is wrong, they'll probably provide more clarity on that. In terms of who does the law not apply to, the law will not apply to advertisements, music videos, and other non-programmable matter, right? So as it is now, the law does not define non-programmable matter. The Kenya Information and Communications Act, which is properly known as KICA, defines programmable as audiovisual content that is intended to inform, educate, or entertain. So there's a very interesting element in the policy as stands, that is digital content creators. So the framework brings digital content creators into its scope, but it does not define who a digital content creator is. We're hoping maybe we'll get some more clarity on that as well. Further into the contents of what exactly can an entity not publish, going back to, of course, the example of ViewSasa. So what exactly can an entity like ViewSasa, for example, not publish? So this is content that's prohibited under law. The law could be the Constitution in its Article 24. It could be the Information and Communication Act, KICA, in its Section 5B. Article 24 speaks to the limits to the freedom of expression for anyone who might not be familiar with that particular part of the law. And of course, content that's prohibited by courts. In addition, there's content that does not meet the film licensing requirements under the Film Stage Plays Act. Now, the Film Stage Plays Act is the law that establishes the Kenya Film Classification Board. So further, we also have content that undermines the country's national values or affects the sovereignty or integrity of the country or is detrimental to Kenya's relation with foreign countries. Now, looking at the bulk of the law, which is probably the most pressing part, is what the complaints operation structure looks like. So the framework has provided a three-tier complaints operation structure, the first tier being a self-classification panel. Now, this is constituted by the applicable entity. I'll stay again using the example of ViewSasa. So ViewSasa Royal Media Services will probably delegate some of its members of the team to constitute a self-classification panel. There's also the aspect of co-regulation classification panel, which consists members of the applicable entity and the board KFCB. And then finally, there's the KFCB classification panel that is constituted fully by the board. Now, what exactly are the functions of the self-classification panel? I think this is probably the most interesting part of the policy. So according to the policy, the panel will classify 70% of content on the platforms, and they will also submit 30% of the content to the board for classification every quarter. So you can see that as according to this, these platforms really have some sort of autonomy over what content goes over the platform, of course, with the oversight of the board. Second, we have the co-regulation classification panel. So that will convene on a case-to-case basis, and they will review the progress, monitor compliance and feedback on self-classification processes, complaints and resolution of complaints as well. Back on the self-classification panel, it's important to note that these entities will be required to display rating information specific to the films that they'll show. They'll also be required to invest in classification technology to supplement the human element. So this sounds like an artificial intelligence based software. Finally, we have the KFCB classification panel. Now, the KFCB classification panel will have more of a supervisory approach. They will classify 30% of content, as mentioned earlier with the self-regulation panel, self-classification panel. They'll also at random sample the 70% content classified by the self-classification panel. So they'll basically oversee and make sure that there are no errors in terms of classification, to make sure that the self-regulatory entities, self-regulated entities are applying to the classification guidelines. Finally, they'll also be required to maintain a catalog of co-regulating entities, the names, the total running time of content submitted for classification, and then, of course, the total running time actually classified, right? As I conclude, what happens once complaints are received? Now, you as a user have the right to make a complaint formally to the entity. Entity, for example, being Royal Media Services, if you feel maybe something was wrongly classified or you're struggling with the access controls, then you have the ability to make a complaint through the online channel, which is great because it makes sure that the complaint mechanism is seamless. Now, once a complaint is received, the board may warn or reprimand an entity. They may also direct an entity to make modifications to the rating. This is, of course, once they've reviewed the complaint and picked out an error. They may also apply the provisions of the Film and Stage Plays Act. Remember, again, KFCB is established under this particular act, so this could be fines or license revocations. Finally, as we get into the session, today's conversation, how can you get involved as a Kenyan citizen? You have the option, of course, to submit your comments and recommendations on the draft framework. At the end of the discussion, we'll be sharing more on what that would look like for you. Remember, the deadline is April 4th, and that is why we're having this conversation today. So I'll just allow the speakers to introduce themselves before we go into the bulk of the conversation. Of course, Liz was here first. Thank you so much for joining us, Liz. Please go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Liz Lendro. I'm an advocate of the High Court of Kenya. I practice under the name and style of my IP Legal Studio, and we are a boutique legal services firm specializing in intellectual property, entertainment, media, fashion, and technology law. And I'm very happy to be here today to discuss what KFCB is trying to propose. Thank you.
Well, good evening, everyone. I'm called Liz Shalaha. I'm the head of legal department at Kenya Film Classification Board. I'm glad this session is happening, and we are ready to take your views and your comments so that we can improve on the document and see how we can work together to make sure that we regulate the broadcast content, the VOD and the OTT. Thank you.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. This is Joel Wamalwa. I'm the manager in charge of licensing and compliance at Kenya Film Classification Board. And I want to take this opportunity actually to, one, welcome each one of you to this forum, and two, equally welcome your intensive look into what we are prescribing for the public and on how we can actually make safe spaces for content that is consumed within Kenya, either on all platforms that we have purpose to regulate for applicable entities, and how we can make this particular regulation responsive enough to enable each player comfortable and comply with the law. Thank you.
I think I'll just dive into the first question. And this question is for you, Lois. I'm curious, what motivated the framework? Why did the Kenya Film Classification Board think that it was important for us to have this particular policy?
Thank you so much for the question. One of the reasons as to why we thought we should have this framework was to create an enabling environment for the broadcasters. We thought we should have a facilitative regulatory environment whereby the OTTs and VOD platform should thrive. So one of the ways to enable them thrive and ensure that they're able to exhibit their content that comply with our law is to enable them have is to come up with this framework where they'll be able to classify 70% of their content. And another reason as to why we put the framework was because of the volume of unclassified content. You will notice that in 2014, we moved from the analog to digital platform, and we had so many broadcasters come on record. They're in numbers, in 200. So if you get the content of each and every broadcast, you find that it is enormous. So one way to ensure that each and every broadcast complies with the law was to come up with the framework so that, because internally we don't have the capacity to classify all that regulation or all that content from the broadcasters. Apart from the unclassified content, also have the human capacity issues that we were not internally, as much as we have the system and staff dedicated to that work, it's not enough. The content online from Netflix, from multi-choice and all the broadcasting stations, it's just too much. So best way to do it is to ensure that we have this framework whereby the broadcasters will be able to classify at least 70% and then we classify 30%. Another motivation was because it is the global trend right now. Most of the countries started this trend. You'll find that South Africa, they're doing it. India, they're doing it. Brazil, they're doing it. So, and it's very effective in those countries. We benchmarked with those countries. So it is one. It's another reason that motivated us to come with this framework. Thank you.
Thanks, Lois. You've actually answered some of the questions I was looking to touch on. But I have to ask Joel, based off your benchmarking, would you say that those were some of the things you were considering when coming together with the concept of co-regulation? Because personally for me as a tech policy professional, this is the first time I'm coming across a co-regulation framework. So would you say that the global trend and what other countries are picking up is what motivated a co-regulation framework?
What I want to say is that why we are adopting co-regulation framework is because, one, is the penetration of content consumption platforms and devices that are all over the country. And when we look at it from a perspective of how easy then would we be in such spaces other than having the distributors of such content partnering with us, and so that we enable them to ensure that whatever content that they are exhibiting conforms to Kenyan law. And that's why now we looked at other jurisdictions, looked at how India has done it, and we've looked at how Brazil has done it, and then how unique is a Kenyan space. And you realize with the growth of internet access, the proliferation of smartphones, nowadays most of the consumers now are consuming content from their own devices, at the comfort of their even comfort of their bedrooms. And when you see into it that we cannot literally have some of these OTT platforms or deliver to us content for classification and then prescribe it in a manner that this is suitable for different ages, then we're like, this is not possible. From a strategic target, we cannot be able to meet this particular demand. And therefore, going by what content, the impact of content has on society. And remember, these gadgets are all over the society, and then we have to find a very favorable approach. See that we don't stifle the growth and innovation, the adoption of ICT in terms of how our communities, our population can be able to access content. Then we said, let us have then a responsibility be shared between us and the platforms that are exhibiting such content. So we target an exhibition element of our regulation where all these particular platforms would come together with us. We train them, we capacity build them, and then from there they can be able to apply the classification guidelines that we use to rate such content and then make such content available for age appropriate. Now, the other element that we want to look at, when we have got unregulated media space, where we have got unfavorable environment for unscrupulous producers and distributors to flood the Kenyan market with even content that is very unpalatable, one that maybe does not even conform to copyright. Then we said, how do we then deal with such a matter other than having the exhibitors themselves take responsibility? And that's why actually we were motivated to push forward with this strategic policy intervention. Thank you.
Thank you so much. For that, for anyone just joining us, fun fact actually is that currently on the capacity issue, as it exists, the board's film examination team can only examine about 720 minutes a day. So that's quite a small percentage, you know, compared to the number of films in the market, as Joel has mentioned. So really do see how co-regulation comes into play. To pivot a bit, Liz, I have to ask, from your perspective, do you think that this space needs to be regulated? And, you know, as we delve into the contents of the policy, what particularly stands out for you? What are some of the highlights for you?
Thanks for that question, Selina. So first and foremost, definitely content regulation is important. It's a must, because if there's no regulation, then I think people would really abuse the space. Factoring in the fact that the space has also really grown and looking at the access that children have as far as content is concerned, I think also now it's time to figure out very pragmatic ways to also approach that. So regulation is important, even for the broadcasters, in terms of just making sure that they respect the watershed period. It's really prudent and you know, just, you know, the formative stages for the children, because the you know, classification primarily exists to protect children from, you know, content that would be harmful to them or would be quote unquote oppressive, or it would influence them in a negative manner. So, you know, I would say the regulation is really important. What has stood out for me is the co-regulation proposal. I applaud it. I have worked as in a media house. And in that particular media house where I worked, they had actually a few people who were dedicated to previewing some of the programs that they would procure from either foreign companies, foreign distribution companies, and even local. And they even used to go as far as even editing out some explicit scenes and things like that. So I think now that they can get that you know, stamp of authority that basically affirms what they do is right and legit, I think it will definitely save time and energy and even taxpayers' money. you know, and even in just time, in terms of the time turnaround time to get content out there to audiences would be much faster for sure. So I really applaud this particular idea, and I think I stand by it.
Thanks so much, Liz. Yeah, I think I also share some of your sentiments. It's the first time I'm seeing, as I mentioned, a co-regulation framework, which is a very interesting way to merge self-regulation and, you know, that oversight mandate that the board has. So that's very commendable. Just as we, you know, as we stick around on the contents of this particular framework, Lois, I'm curious as to what the scope looks like. I know that the policy talks a bit about video on demand platforms, OTT platforms, distributors, broadcasters with a physical presence in Kenya. Probably a lot of our audience are wondering, so does Netflix, you know, occupy this space physically? Because I know they have a sub-Saharan office, but, you know, will they fall under the scope of this particular policy?
Thank you, Selina. Definitely, Netflix will fall within the scope of this policy. If you look at our laws, any OTTs actually that exhibit or distribute any content to the public within the Kenyan space, they're supposed to comply with the laws, and film and stage plays act being one of the laws, so they definitely have to comply. Maybe to interest you is that we are already having talks with the Netflix. We have had several meetings. We have had several meetings with them, and they are gearing for their classifiers to be trained so that they can ensure that they comply with the classification of their content within the Kenyan space. And also, just to let you know that, you know, in some other countries as well, Netflix exhibits their countries there, and they're complying with the rating of those particular countries. So it is not something new. It's something that we've researched, and it's something that we're talking with Netflix, not only Netflix, but other players in the field as well, so that as we're rolling out this program, they should be able to understand it and apply the concepts. Thank you, Selina.
I think just a quick question also on the scope. On the scope still. I noticed for my review of the policy that there's a section on that speaks specifically to digital content creators, but there's no definition of digital content creators under the framework or KICA. So I'm curious, how does the KFCB view, who does the KFCB view a digital content creator to be?
Actually, when we were developing this particular framework, we're looking at someone who creates an audio visual content within the Republic of Kenya, and he has significant media footprint or followers online. You realize some of the digital content creators now have got even a bigger fan base, have got a bigger following, bigger subscribers to their platforms than even non-linear TV platforms. And with the digital migration has opened up these spaces. You find many followers now following such content creators, be it adverts, be it product endorsements, be it promotion of various maybe narratives, maybe film, maybe music. And then you find the move of advertising space has gone into such places. When a digital content creator has a platform, and for that very platform has maybe 500 followers. Those followers then are having the eyeballs onto what he's creating. He's endorsing certain TV commercials, and you find they are competing for the same space. So we felt like, as the regulator, to apply this platform equally across board, then we would have a market structure that would cater for digital content creators, linear TV operators, and as well as OTTs. And that's why we have to look at digital content creators as someone who has significant media presence and or footprint in the digital space. And that's how then we have created this particular policy, so that now with the inputs from our stakeholders, we can continue evolving that particular legislation to refine it further, so that one, we do not stifle the growth, but as well we create an environment where such content creators would be able to comply with the law. As it is now, we've got many. Some of them are still at amateur level. Others are now moved into professional digital content creators with a huge pool of service providers, or either maybe professionals that have employed. And then we want to harness that as a platform where such people would continue not only creating jobs, but also doing business in a legitimate way.
Thanks, Joel. I think you've done quite a good job at sort of fleshing out what exactly a digital content creator is. I'm glad that we're having this space because it allows a space for shared learnings, you know. So even as we make recommendations on the policy, we have a bit of an idea of what to expect in the long run. Personally, for me, I'm of the view that this provision on digital content creators should be defined expressly in the interpretation of the framework. And what exactly does that following look like, a substantial amount of people following them? Also considering that, you know, digital content creators sometimes work in advertising, and the policy applies to entities. So those are, I think, some of the things that were going on around my mind when I was reading the policy. But Liz, I'm curious, for you, what are your thoughts on this particular provision on digital content creators? Do you view maybe that it could be challenging to implement, or is it a step in the right direction?
I think it's definitely a challenge to implement. You know, first and foremost, I'm a proponent of freedom of expression. Of course, with its limitations, but I'm a proponent of freedom of expression and freedom of choice, access to information and whatever content that one may please, and to also disseminate the same. And you know, having look at even just the political climate as it has been, you know, in the last 10 years, we've seen civil society die a natural death, right? So social media has become one of those platforms where people are actually able to share their opinions, which converts into content. So now that we are saying that we need to look at regulation, then, you know, it's going to be a challenge for sure, because it means that to some extent, the freedom of expression will be curtailed, and we have to figure out what would be the balance for that? Because again, we do not want to take away that from Kenyan citizens, which is a right that is guaranteed under the Constitution of Kenya. So we really have to be very pragmatic in regards to that. As you said, it's really important that it's defined. Who are these digital content creators? What is digital content? So that then again, all the gray areas are already identified, and we know what is what, right? Otherwise, we'll find ourselves in a very weird situation in regards to that. I think secondly, when we are now trying to classify and regulate these platforms, video on demand and the likes, I mean, we have to upload some of them that they are already doing that, especially, you know, for example, Netflix. You know, by the time you're accessing content, there's usually the information, I think it's on your left side of the screen. When you just click on the flick, you're able to see the disclaimers. They tell you the age, what you need to look out for in the content and whatnot, which already I think they're doing. So perhaps maybe there's some mild difference in the different jurisdictions, but at least we see them doing that. My greatest hope is that, you know, when we look at this proposed regulation and the conversation around restricted content, again, you know, trying to regulate morality for adults is quite, again, a very interesting space, you know, in terms of, you know, once you become an adult, you get to exercise your constitutional freedoms to, you know, to the fullest. So again, you cannot try and influence what people think, because, you know, you had 18 years to for the society to quote unquote bring you up, tell you or inform you of what is the ideal. And after that, you decide to choose the kind of person you are or you want to be, the kind of ideologies that you want to be a proponent for. So again, that is very interesting to see, and to see how it perhaps can be addressed better. And then again, on the same note, I think that the one of the things that is yet to be addressed in this co-regulation would be as pertained to, you know, content that has been generated across different countries. I would name the particular flick it was a series, but there was a particular series that we had access to on Netflix. Parts of it were shot in Kenya, parts of it were shot in different parts of the world as well. And unfortunately, we observed some sort of double standards, because this particular film, what these regulations, even just before these proposed ones we have, the current regulations that we have at Kenya Film Classification, but what they applied to their strictest as they normally do, then that particular content would not have probably light of day in terms of even being produced in Kenya, the scenes being produced in Kenya. So I think as we're looking at these regulations, I think it would be the time to also have a conversation around co-productions and the fairness of treatment of such productions, so that then at the end of the day, we remember that they're also adults who have that freedom of choice and access. And that, I think, also needs to be respected. So I think digital content creator, that definition is important. What is digital content? That definition is also very important. And figuring out what the balance would look like. Because again, when we are too broad, it means that there would be a lot of extremes either for or against in terms of what we would see either from the regulatory side and from the members of the public side. Thanks.
Awesome, Liz. Thank you so much for that. As you were speaking, you know, I couldn't help but think, maybe it might be a long shot or a shot in the dark, or maybe it's time also to reconsider what the film classification guidelines look like. I don't know. But that's just a question or something I'll throw in there. But now that we are on the conversation around what the framework looks like as it is and probably what proposals for bettering it would look like, what do you think are some of the elements that have been left out, away from what you've already spoken about around definitions and that autonomy that you give to adult viewers or subscribers? Do you think that there are any other elements that the framework does not address or does not address adequately?
I think it is time that we thought about other technological methods that can be employed, especially on as far as digital content is concerned, to self-regulate or protect. So as opposed to just having such regulations, perhaps also introducing a recommendation where, you know, if you have a platform that distributes this kind of content, what kind of technological measures do you have to verify that, you know, it's adults who have access to the content? Again, that may or may not bring some data protection issues because of the kind of data that may be required to be shared in terms of verifying if an individual is an adult. But I think using technology is something that we definitely need to employ. We are seeing that in other jurisdictions where to access certain content, there are some things you either have to tick, some information you have to give for you to be able to get access to that content. So I think that is very important. Secondly, we know how painstaking the issue of regulation can be. So perhaps this is the opportunity to tackle this in its entirety. So when we look at how KFCB handles regulation, remember that, you know, like for either local productions or foreign productions being created or produced in Kenya, there is that film license that they need to take out where the production house will share their script in its original form or how they envision to show to do the production. And there's a preliminary review by the board, and then they're given the go ahead to proceed and shoot the film, right? So they now enter production stage. Or first of all, in between, if there are any major changes, they still have to go back to the board to have those reviewed. And then after the production is done, they still have to take that back, you know, the production or rather the final for review and classification. So perhaps this this system or this process may be thought through, rethought through to save time and money as far as that is concerned. Another thing that I think is really important, personally, because I represent a lot of independent production houses, we have noted that in a few instances, they submitted their films for classification, and then their scenes disappeared. So I think it's time for the board to also figure out some additional clauses or proposals that would deal with the whole disclosure element in terms of submissions, the kind of duty of care that is also expected. I think we need that in writing in terms of also them submitting to confidentiality, to that duty of care to take care of these films and ensure that there's no piracy. Because unfortunately, I've had a client whose film was pirated during that period where they were submitting, and they were the only one who had a copy of that CD. So it brought up a lot of issues. They eventually dropped that case or the situation. They decided not to pursue. But that, of course, for me as a practitioner, showed that there was a few issues that really need to be tackled. There needs to be a procedure or a process that's introduced when someone submits a film, and how they get to either collect their CD. And then, of course, because the archiving element is taken care of by the Kenya Film Commission. But I think in that regard, there also needs to be some policy provisions that take care of that sort of quote unquote disclosure submission stage or phase. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Liz. I think from what I hear, this is a lot around that needs to be done around digitizing some of these processes. I think it's also encouraging to see that the board is requiring that self-classification panels invest in classification technology, you know, to have that human element supplemented. So I think that's very encouraging. This also just is to show the other applications of AI away from what we normally know. And I'd invite you, anyone in this space right now, to check out the Africa Law Tech Festival 2022 that will be focused on artificial intelligence policy. You can just check out the Lawyers Hub page and you'll be able to access more information on that. Jumping right back in, Lois, I'm curious to hear, just based off the conversation we've had generally and, you know, your process in drafting this particular framework, are there any challenges you envision with the implementation process? And if so, what are some of those challenges?
Yeah, we envision some challenges when implementing this. One of the challenges, of course, as Liz had mentioned earlier, we are going to lose some revenue. But we are a regulator, so we are not so keen in making some money out of it, but to ensure that there is compliance with our law. So that is one of the challenge that we're going to envision. But for as long as a good percentage, let's say 70% complying with the law, we are good with that. That is a risk that we can live with. Another that we envision is non-compliant, especially with the OIs. And that's why I've as mentioned earlier, we are having off the record meetings. We had a meeting with Netflix. We are talking with MultiChoice. We are talking with some of the online platform, Facebook. We are trying to reach out to Twitter, to TikTok, just to ensure that they understand what we are trying to understand what is in the regulation, especially the part of the co-regulation, so that at least we have better compliance. So with that, once we have we are done with the pilot stage, because we want to pilot these regulations in the next 6 months, and once we get all the input from the stakeholders. And thank you, Liz, for the input that you've given. We are going to consider, we are going to go and try and incorporate some of the input that you've given to us. So once we get all the input from the stakeholders on the areas that they think need to be enhanced, areas that need to be dropped, we'll be able to now start strictly implementing the co-regulation framework. And there'll be penalties, because the framework is emanating from our law. Our law gives the penalties and the imprisonment for non-compliant. So once we are done with the piloting, we are able to ensure that at least each and every stakeholder has understood the document, then we'll start now strictly enforcing the law. So if there'll be that percentage of non-compliance, how we want to mitigate it, we'll be mitigating that through maybe taking a few culprits to court to ensure that they comply with that. Yeah, another challenge I said was the human capacity, as earlier mentioned, but that one also we are mitigating through now the co-regulation framework that you're coming up with. So we'll have to be able to build capacity for the broadcasters or the stakeholders that we intend to ensure that the stakeholders that the framework is going to apply to, we are going to build their capacity to ensure that at least they have a team that that is able to regulate the content of that particular platform. Let's say if a Citizen, we intend to have at least train at least 5 or 10 people from Citizen who specifically deal with the classification of the content of that particular station, so that at least they should be able to classify that content. On top of it, we also have another level where we should be able to also intervene as Kenya Film Classification Board, so that if there are any challenges, we should be able to come in and help with the issue of the classification.
Thank you, Lois. Thank you, Lois. You've actually enumerated most of the anticipated challenges that maybe the board will face. What we're looking at, you know, we are establishing responsibility on part of the platform owners to establish to invest in technology. And as we all know, some of these technologies are quite expensive. Only established media houses can be able to undertake such. And with the content that we are asking them to examine, may they establish that maybe in a given media house they have around maybe 5 or 6 people. And without an established infrastructure, ICT infrastructure, to help them classify such content, it will really become a very big problem. Two, the challenge that we're equally facing, you know, is that content that is coming from outside the country come with different ratings, and some of the producers across the globe would so wish that maybe their content remains for general public or maybe parental guidance. And that way, whenever it comes to Kenya and it's classified, maybe the rating is increased, maybe made 18 or so, and therefore maybe restricting it to a particular set of audience. That one in itself would really make us look like maybe we are too much censoring, given that the different and diversity of cultural beliefs, maybe that are informing our national values, are different. And therefore, this is something that we want to look at because we are a global player, and we don't want to further and let the Republic into zones of where maybe retrogressive policies are done. That is something that we have to deal with. The other challenge that we are facing, maybe and Liz mentioned, the co-creation of content. This particular framework specifically targets classification of content. We have made several assumptions about it, that local content or content that are produced locally would actually be in conformity with the Kenya Film Classification Board, and therefore, and in practice, then it might not be the case, because some of the filmmakers come to the Republic, they make films, and they do some shooting, then they go and produce this one elsewhere. As we realize, production spaces, production houses in Kenya are not that advanced, and many of our filmmakers prefer producing their content elsewhere and then come back to the country to exhibit. So at content creation, whereas we have made an assumption that this one would be in conformity with the law, in practice it might not be the case, and it's something that we have to look into. Then the issue of perhaps if I respond to the issue of privacy of or the integrity part of submission of content to our board, we have developed a platform, our online licensing platform, where this content now once submitted to us, it remains so, and under no circumstance it will be leaked to the public or to other parties to do piracy. Same, and it has really helped us mitigate the old problems we're having, where someone would submit a disc, and the disc then maybe along the way the content disappears. But now it is delivery. Once the producer delivers the content direct to us, it's reviewed from our back end. And now with the advancement of technology, we have specific keys that are given to our staffs, and those particular keys are only known by the supply of that content. Once it is examined and archived appropriately, then that content, the integrity of that content still remains, and it only be premiered before even another person, another third party can access it. That is something that we have really worked on, and we value that the work, that the investment and time that people put into these productions are not something that we can easily, as a board or as a staff, play with, and then maybe you result into desired losses or liabilities to our parties. Now, the final element that I want to speak about, the challenge that we are anticipating, is the different establishment in Kenya, and maybe this one will go to the consumption of content as it is, and our consumers, because our consumers have become very clever. They are circumventing the networks that maybe by creating VPN networks, they are accessing content that is meant for other countries, maybe meant for Europe, meant for America and other jurisdictions. That way, even if we create a content that has been examined by a platform owner, then they have maybe excited some offensive sections. But then our consumers would still go ahead and create such networks and access such content. And you might know, maybe they are even teenagers, maybe they are not even the age that they can access such content. So that one still remains a big problem that we face as a regulator. I think that those are among the issues that I wanted to mention. Celine, thank you.
Thanks, Joel. As you speak, I can't help but, think again about my concerns. And I think I really need to emphasize my concerns on content moderation. I see that Frank Monyango has joined us, is in the room. Frank, I've pinned you to come on and speak. I'm curious about your views as well. When it comes to, again, the element of digital content creation and what exactly is an applicable entity, I'm a bit concerned as to what the content moderation space will look like, given that a lot of digital content creators fall under the scope of user-generated content. If you're looking at TikTok, for example, will my 10 followers suffice as a substantial amount of followers? And will I be required to, submit my TikToks? Anyway, that's just something that's to mind. But Frank, you're now here with us. I'd like to hear your thoughts first on the policy generally, and then do you think that it would have any effect on the content moderation space and censorship? And if so, what kind of effect do you envision?
Thank you very much. What I think about the co-regulation idea that KFCB is trying to push is that they have acknowledged that they cannot classify everything. But I have reservations based on two things. When I was doing research over this entire issue, one thing that was glaring to me was the aspect of freedom of expression, the limitations that are coded in the Constitution of Kenya, and the limitations that are there in the Constitution of Kenya in Article 33, Sub-Article 2. And like, for me, it comes out as there's a certain excuse, I'll use the word excuse in this context, when it comes to justifying limitations to freedom of expression. First one is protection of children. And the other one is Article 10, national values. Now, if you look at, let's say, children, how many smartphones are there in Kenya? Smart devices, around 2 million, 22 million. How many are in the hands of children? If it comes to access to content that is at of risk, there has to be an adult element. Because even, let's say, if it's to pay for Netflix, you need a card. Do minors in Kenya have debit cards unless they get them from adults? What I'm trying to bring about is that while I acknowledge what KFCB is trying to do, I feel like these regulations and efforts are just a disguise to limit the freedom of expression. And researching on now international approaches to now OTT regulation, Europe really did not pay attention to that. In fact, Europe's idea when it came to OTTs, it was on, are these OTTs, especially like Netflix and Disney, are they investing in the film industries within those countries? Here it's like we are keen on policing speech. In other countries where we want to be like, the efforts are on investment on local content. So personally, I feel like the efforts are misplaced. We little industry that we have, we really want to curtail it. And I feel like efforts should be on building the industry. Then you have mass of content to now start regulating. But now if it's just like even the little that are there, you want to gag them, I don't think that's directing energies into the right place.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for that. Yeah, but you know, we have to also acknowledge it's quite encouraging to see also some of the efforts by some of these platforms in investing in the creator economy in Africa, in Kenya more specifically. I think it's just yesterday or last weekend that we saw Netflix, you know, partner with the Hiva Fund for some grants that's specific for film creators and content creators in the region. So that's encouraging. But yeah, I do understand, you know, where your sentiments come from. There is lots to be done. And actually, when I was designing the session, I thought that the initial question would be what are the other pressing issues for the film industry in Kenya. But then this just goes to show that there's space for a follow-up conversation. Just as we wrap up, but I'm curious, just to hear a quick parting shot from our speakers, what would you say are the next steps in this space? What do we do going forward, given that, you know, we have 1 week to the submissions? What do short-term steps look like, and what do long-term steps look like as well?
I think since as a nation we're still grappling with the parameters and definition of what public participation means or constitutes, you know, for me the question is, in terms of public participation, are we getting enough insight that includes the people in Mashinani first and foremost, so that then we have a more comprehensive regulatory framework going forward, as opposed to doing things half-half. I think KFCB would be the ones to even just hopefully even be transparent enough to say, you know, this is the kind of observations we have made, and then ask for even more recommendations, maybe from our stakeholders. Because again, you know, depending on the kind of reach that the different stakeholders have, we'd be able to also assist where there's a challenge. I think at the end of the day, for me, in my view, is that our short term and long term are kind of should be the same, because this industry is really fast paced. So we cannot afford, in my view, to have sort of like short-term, long-term parameters in terms of making sure that content is, you know, quote-unquote regulated properly in good time, and all these other emanating issues are also, you know, solved or sorted in good time as far as the regulations are concerned. I think the regulations could use more beefing up. Because we've identified a couple of issues that need to be included. So hopefully maybe there will be a second sort of public participation forum where now we look at what has been put together after the feedback that has been generated throughout this process. I think that would be very important. When you're looking at the creative space and how regulations and legislations are normally passed, I feel like we tend to be rather rushed. We are, you know, for the creative space, we are always being rushed in some way or form or shape. So we're always like, you know, in a state of panic. We're like, oh my gosh, you know, so and so this particular entity has done X, Y, and Z. We need to give feedback. And then the kind of reporting after the feedback is what we hardly ever experience. So perhaps as we are building up to having a proper regulatory framework, let's have another public participation forum where KFCB can give us feedback and tell us this is the feedback that we have received from the different forums that we have attended, from the different memorandums that have been submitted, and this is what we have come up with. If possible, even highlight the new additions, if possible. And then from there, we are able to have further discussions and then a final document that perhaps most stakeholders are happy with, or at least 90% happy with. You know, there's some middle ground, so to speak. And before, you know, we conclude, I think the other thing that we have, the regulation has not anticipated or included, is the issue of dispute resolution, or in the instance, there's an appeal that would need to be sought by a decision made by the board in regards to the either classification or the restriction thereof. I think the appeals tribunal under KICA should have jurisdiction over such, to be the first court of instance or tribunal of instance when such issues are being discussed, so that by the time there's a further appeal, maybe to the High Court and the higher courts, at least there is a tribunal that has discussed these matters in a more intricate affair or detail, and they're able to issue even guiding judgments. Because remember, the reason we have tribunals is that they constitute members who are specialized in these areas or in those particular areas under the tribunals, the specific industry, the kind of experience that they have. And we would benefit from that to also help us build case law and jurisprudence, and also just guide even other courts in terms of how they would think through such issues. I think as Emonyango highlighted, you know, when we talk about the issue of freedom of expression, there's a lot to be unpacked there when we're talking about digital platforms, the issue of access, mostly talking about adults. There's a whole lot there that could be unpacked. But all in all, I would say that the co-regulation framework is a step in the right direction, and we are happy to see such progress. We're happy to see, you know, a government agency is basically stating, you know what, actually the capacity is far more than what we can achieve, and I think we can collaborate. So kudos to KFCB for that. We really appreciate, and we hope that after this, we would have a second session or second sitting where we'll now be discussing the input that you have received towards having a final regulatory framework. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Liz. I think you've highlighted some very important points. I'd actually not even thought about what an appeal mechanism would look like. So thank you so much for sharing. As I said, you know, this is a space for shared learnings. You know, we learn from KFCB, KFCB learns from us, and we learn from each other as well. So Frank, I'll just hand over to you as well. Is there anything that you think is missing that needs to be included? And also just a quick parting shot as we wrap up.
I think whatever they're doing is good because they're consulting. I hope they're willing to get people's views and adopt them. I also hope there'll be efforts in training, instead of just putting sanctions on creators, have more of an open or engaging way of having classification. Like now you train people, you engage, rather than just getting like those the board has decided that this content is banned. It creates bad blood, and the good that you do gets destroyed. Doesn't get seen from such actions. But all in all, I'm happy that they are doing public participation, and I think I'm also happy that they acknowledge that they cannot regulate everything. And but I hope that they will also consider people's views. That's a lot to say.
Thank you so much, Frank. I think the issue of public participation has come up quite a bit. Over to you, Will. Anything you'd like to add as we close off?
Thank you, Sunder. I want to mention that as a board, we are changing from the old model of regulation to one that is participatory, one that enables the industry to comply. And also, we are moving away from censorship. As a board, we want to have films rated for different age users. Now, when we do that, we will be very transparent in the manner that we undertake this particular mandate. For our engagement with the public, we still maintain public engagement. All the comments, all the inputs that have been made, the suggestions that have been made to improve this particular policy, we'll have a proper matrix for which then we'll consolidate all the issues, and thereafter we'll have a validation workshop that we will call upon stakeholders and we'll give a rationale why some of the proposals were upheld and why maybe we had a divergent view on some of the proposals that have been fronted. And that's how then going forward we wish to engage with the Kenyan public going forward. Thank you, Madam.
Thanks so much, Joel. That's very encouraging to hear. Also walking us through the steps, what happens after the submissions are made. I think that's very important. A lot of people tend to lose hope once they make the submissions. They don't know what comes next. So thank you so much for that. Lois, anything as we close off?
Thank you, Selina. I would just want to talk to Mr. Onyango on the issues. He brought up the issues of us curtailing the industry through the regulation. But maybe that's not really true. What you are working on and our interest as a board is to protect children from exposure to harmful content. He talked of Netflix. If you look at Netflix, I have a Netflix account. And I have even my children have created for them an account where they can be able to view their content. But when you go to that account, they're still able to access content that is not suitable for them. As much as I'm the one paying for I'm subscribing for that services, I'm not able to control entirely on what my children are watching. So that is why as regulator we come in. And as Alia said, we are working together with other government agencies like Kenya Film Commission. We are working on issues of incentives, rebates, on some of these the producers who would come to this country, how we can facilitate them and ensure that they are able to produce content within the Kenyan space. This will benefit Kenya as large and the creative industry at large. So we are also working on some of mechanism to ensure that we promote the creative industry and not just to curtail them per se. And also on the issues of freedom, section 33 you talked about, it's not absolute. It has to be within some, there have to be some limitation. So we are not like entirely, as regulator, we're not prohibiting. We need to encourage that. But what is behind the reason behind the regulation? Mainly is just to protect children against harmful content. And that is our main agenda as Kenya Film Classification Board. We understand that adults are free to access or watch content that they wish to watch. And that is okay with us. That's why we have a rating of 18 and above. So, and this Netflix, as much as, I'm just using Netflix as an example, as much as they are able to have their rating, you'll find that most of that rating they do not comply with our rating here in Kenya. You'll find that their rating of 16, that content has some, that film has content that is not suitable for children here. There are 16 in countries like America, and mostly they use that rating. It will not be 16 here. 16 is adult in America. Here in Kenya is 18. So some of those are some of the issues that we want to address in this co-regulation framework, so that they apply our classification and not foreign classification, so that children should be able, as a parent, you should be able to advise your children that whenever you see this rating classification, don't watch it. It's not within your purview. But as an adult, you should be able to watch whatever content you feel like. Thank you, Selena. But again, just to wind up, we are grateful for this session. We have noted your concerns. We will be able to rework on the document. And as Wamala has earlier said, we'll have a validation workshop where we'll be able now to discuss with the stakeholders on the input that they would have given us and just highlight the ones that you have incorporated and the reason why we have not incorporated some of the input that we would have received. Thank you so much, Selena.
Thank you, Lois, and also for bringing some clarity, you know, to some of the things that have come up in the discussion. I think, as I mentioned earlier, it's very encouraging to see KFCB willing to come into sessions like this and take the public's views into consideration. So thank you so much for that. Of course, we could be here forever. For me, I have lots of other follow-up questions, but I'm happy to hear that, you know, there's going to be additional sessions for us to engage further. Also, as Lois has mentioned, Joel, Frank, and Liz as well, public participation is ongoing. You have a week up until the 4th of April to submit your comments to KFCB. I think with that, I'd just like to say thank you to our speakers for taking the time to join us today. It's just been some valuable insights. With that, I'll just say thank you everyone for joining in and for your time. Asanteni.
The Africa Law Tech podcast explores the latest in law technology and entrepreneurship in the African continent. This weekly podcast is brought to you by the Lawyers Hub, a law tech organization working on digital policy and justice innovation in Africa. To find out more, visit lawyershub.org or email us on info@lawyershub.ke.